Hello and welcome to another episode of City on a Hill, a podcast about what it means to be a citizen of heaven and a citizen of the United States. We want to encourage Christians to find their tribe in the church and their hope in the kingdom of God, rather than to seek both in the kingdom of man. So with that, let's get to it today.
Well, hello, welcome back to the City on a Hill podcast. I am Eric.
And I'm Scott.
And we are excited to talk this morning. I don't even know, what is it, afternoon? Doesn't really matter, we're recording. And we're going to be talking about civic religion. We've hit quite a few topics, and part of it has been the relationship between church and state and the relationship of being practicing Christians and living in this place. And the necessary topic we need to chat about is civic religion. And I think the most obvious example of civic religion, the most obvious physical example of civic religion would probably be the National Cathedral. When I was there several years ago, we visited the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., and you walk up and you think, this is a church. Yeah, I'm used to this type of thing. But it's something a little bit different than a church. It's something I view on the website for the National Cathedral. It says a spiritual home for the nation. So technically, it's an Episcopalian place of worship. But I was walking through there, and there was a lot of American history type stuff in there. The Woodrow Wilson is buried there. He's not buried. He's in a concrete casket of some sort. Yeah. There's something different going on than this is where we do Sunday worship things. This is where we worship Jesus. Well, let's be explicit. it's where funerals happen for
dignitaries,
members, yeah. For dignitaries or statesmen or stateswomen or people of high regard in the government. When the country needs to mourn, that's where that happens in a formal sense. After 9/11, that's where the mourning service was held. So it's the seat of some type of spirituality, some type of religion, but it's not necessarily a Christian religion. It's something different. It's something more civic than Christian.
The fact that you've got a cathedral feels Christian, I suppose.
Definitely.
But if you were to think about the religious element of the United States, there's all kinds of stuff that I think is super interesting about it. If you were just to start with, okay, what makes up a religion? You would probably have something in the effect of its own sacred events, like holidays, its own sacred places, like monuments or a cathedral, their own martyrs, rituals, symbols. Those sorts of things are all very religious, and you don't have to think very hard about President's Day or Memorial Day or the 4th of July or even Thanksgiving as these sacred events, sacred places, Arlington, all of the monuments. You've got martyrs. I guess those are all also kind of characterized in those same places. So you've got all of it, really. And that's not to say that it's, you know, good or bad. It's just to say that there is something inherently religious in this history and this United States that we enjoy. Now, that is, I suppose I can leave it to your imagination whether you like that or not, or whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is a thing. I guess that's my point, is that
definitely a thing.
You've got to come to grips with the fact that it is everywhere. You've got four references to God in the Declaration of Independence, the laws of nature and nature's God. You've got endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. You've got the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of their intentions and the firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. And so you've got references to deity in our founding document. And that's what you've got. And you have to say then, and this might be what we want to talk about in the next episode, but does that qualify it to be Christian? If you've got God, if you've got a creator, if you've got divine providence, the supreme judge of the world, does that make a Christian? And so I don't think it's super simple, because you have multiple biblical allusions, not illusions like a magic trick, allusions, so that you've got you've got ideas of an exodus, of chosen people, of promised land, of New Jerusalem, of city on a hill. How's that?
Nice. It's all coming together.
Yes, a sacrificial death and rebirth. You've got all of these sort of archetypes or pieces of biblical religion embedded in this religion or civic religion in America. So sometimes people will call it civil religion. Some will call it civic religion. Sometimes it's called public religion. But it is the fact that that part of our national identity is religion. And so you've got these allusions to God, but is this the God of the Bible? Is it the Christian God? How does this function in American life? So I've got a couple things. I ran across a great paper by Robert Bella. He wrote it in 1967, not long after Kennedy's inauguration. In fact, he begins it with Kennedy's address, but he goes back to the founders. And I just want to read a couple things about the founders and have you think about what role religion played in the minds of the founders when they were putting the country together. So here's Benjamin Franklin in his autobiography. He says, "I was never without some religious principles. I never doubted, for instance, the existence of the deity, that he made the world and governed it by his providence, that the most acceptable service of God was the doing of good to men, that our souls are immortal, that all crime will be punished and virtue rewarded either here or hereafter. These I esteemed the essentials of every religion, and being to be found in all the religions we had in our country, I respected them all, though with different degrees of respect, as I found them more or less mixed with other articles, which, without any tendency to inspire, promote, or confirm morality, serve principally to divide us and make us unfriendly to one another." And so he liked that. In fact, I've got another quote by him that I just, I love this. This is him writing to the Yale president on March 9th of 1790, 14 years after the Declaration, and just before he died. He said, "I believe in one God, creator of the universe, that he governs it by his providence, that he ought to be worshiped, that the most acceptable service we can render to him is doing good to his other children, that the soul of man is immortal and will be treated with justice in another life, respecting its conduct in this. These I take to be the fundamental principles of all sound religion, and I regard them as you do, in whatever sect I meet with them. As to Jesus of Nazareth, I think the system of morals in his religion, as he left them to us, the best the world ever saw or is likely to see. But I apprehend it has received various corrupting changes, and I have some doubts as to his divinity. Though it's a question I do not dogmatize upon, having never studied it, and think it needless to busy myself with it now, when I expect soon an opportunity of knowing the truth with less trouble." Namely, he was planning to die and find out then. which strikes me as kind of a bad idea, but it's Benjamin Franklin's business. But he, you know, he valued it. He valued
the moral structure.
The moral structure, and especially had admiration for the moral structure Jesus brought. Here is Washington's farewell address.
Well, and before you jump there, it's notable two things. First, he, not to be derogatory, but diluted down to just simply a basic moral frame in order that whenever he went to different religions, he'd go, oh yeah, you got some of this basic stuff. I got some of this basic stuff. We're all on the same page. It was diluted enough that the differences were removed. And then he placed great emphasis, even the way you were talking through those quotes, the main emphasis was on, I don't think he said love your neighbor, but basically
do good. Yeah.
Do good for people to people. He mentioned worship God, but the primary thing you can do is people to people type things, which is almost like a humanist deist approach to religion. It's a diluted, form, which is interesting.
I think you can safely say the founders went out of their way not to be sectarian and to be careful to have it, you know, in some respect, have a lowest common denominator so that they can accommodate other religions. So you mentioned that. I think it's very important that you also recognize that those particulars that you are looking for, Eric, that would make it Christian, namely Jesus, namely something Trinitarian, those are not anywhere to be seen in America's founding documents.
Or in Ben Franklin's quotes.
Certainly not in Ben Franklin. Yes. So here's Washington's farewell address. And Bella suggests that it is explicit in its utilitarian approach to religion. And I think that's an important way to think of the function of religion in American life. It goes like this. Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firm props of the duties of men and citizens. The mere politician, equally with the pious man, ought to cherish and respect them. A volume could not trace all their connections with private and public felicity. Let it simply be asked, where is the security for property, for reputation, for life, if the sense of religious obligation desert the oaths, which are the instruments of investigation in courts of justice? And let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. Whatever may be conceded to the influence of refined education on the minds of peculiar structure, reason, and experience, both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. So that, first of all, is exceedingly religious and over the top suggests that Washington, or perhaps Hamilton, if he was the one who wrote that speech, believes that religion is what makes people civil and governable in the world. And so he thinks that politicians should definitely encourage religion for the sake of the public peace. The other thing that I would have you note about that quote especially, though, is its, Bella's word is utilitarian approach to religion. But religion is not the end. God is not the end. The state or the civic union or the morality of the citizens is the end. And religion is the support of that end. And I don't think that you would probably say it that same way if you were talking about the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Right. Yeah, it's a means to an end. And it makes sense on a practical or utilitarian, I think that's a great word for this use. In order to make a people governable, they need to have morality. They need to have a list of things. We do these things and we don't do these things, or virtues to pursue or vices to avoid. And you need a moral structure or a religious framework to give you that list. And if you don't have that list, that tends towards anarchy. That tends towards something that's not governable. So it makes sense in a utilitarian way that, yes, we're going to need something. And if you go back all the way to Socrates, all the way to Plato, all the way to Aristotle, when they were talking about how do we put government together, what's the best way to govern a people, they're often talking about what do we tell people about the gods? If we're going to have them be governable, we probably need to tell them about the gods, because the gods will punish them if they, and tell them the gods will punish them if they do not follow virtue, because that would make a people able to be governed. So they're often talking about what is the religion, I'll use my terms, what is the religion we're going to teach them so that we can create a state, so that we can create a government that will be effective and will be helpful. Because any government, to some degree, should be aiming for peace, should be aiming for a peaceful city, a peaceful city state or nation or whatever. So you need those frameworks.
And it is interesting how important that was to the founders, so that they put it in the Declaration, they included it in their farewell and inaugural addresses. They all mention God and God bless America. There is a sense in which that's just super important. And it is interesting, even as you were talking about the going way back to the old guys, that it may explain why we have some of the challenges we have in America today, is that we don't necessarily agree upon the moral framework that makes people or a nation able to be governed. That's easier to say than governable. I've tried both, but
slipping on my tongue on that one.
Yes, makes them easy to be governed. And I think we don't agree on that. And I think that's some of why we have the challenges we do. The other thing that I would say about this with respect to the founders is that they came out of a church with an established religion. They knew they didn't want to establish a religion and have the church per se in bed with the government or vice versa, but they also saw the value of faith along with their religion. So they weren't willing to jettison everything, but they did their best to make it, to make it religious with it being general enough not to establish any one particular religion. Maybe that's a way to think about it.
Sufficiently ambiguous.
Yeah. So here's another take on it, I suppose, from John Meacham in his book, American Gospel, God, the Founding Fathers, Making of a Nation. He says, the great good news about America, the American gospel, if you will, is that religion shapes the life of a nation without strangling it. Belief in God is central to the country's experience, yet for the broad center, faith is a matter of choice, not coercion. The legacy of the founding is that the sensible center holds. It does so because the founders believe themselves at work in the service of both God and man, not just one or the other.
And again, we're back to that middle ambiguous general reference to religion in order to put as many people in that category as possible, but to not aim for those distinctives like the deity of Christ, to name one, that would make it a very narrow definer of religion and thus cut out a bunch of people that belong to the country.
And so I think it's fair to say that both, they wanted it kind of both ways. And we benefit from it being both ways, but I think it's important that we recognize that it isn't Christianity that they were after, or that they were trying to, they weren't trying to make Christianity the centerpiece. John Adams said, "I hate polemical politics and polemical divinity. My religion is founded on the love of God and my neighbor, on the hopes of pardon for my offenses, upon contrition, upon the duty as well as necessity of enduring with patience the inevitable evils of life, and the duty of doing no wrong, but all the good I can to the creation of which I am but an infinitesimal part." And he was about as devout or religious as any of the founders, I suppose. But in the, when he completed in 1797 the treaty with Tripoli, that was ratified by the Senate in 1797, it declared that the government of the United States is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion, which is a really straight up statement about what they thought they were doing. The reality is they probably have founded it on Christianity more than they realize, because the symbols and the language and all of it does come from Christianity. But at least in that statement of the Treaty of Tripoli, he was intent on saying that this religion we're talking about is not Christianity, though it might be founded upon or based upon or resemble. He did not
influenced by
it, definitely be influenced by. So that's, I think that's kind of how the founders saw this religion that they were building into the country. And then you've got that same kind of language in the Civil War. We mentioned this in our history survey, but Lincoln was asked whether he was on, whether God was on his side. And he said, "I don't so much care that God's on my side. I want to be on his side." And there is this sense in which Lincoln and Washington, as far as saints go for the American religion, are right up there. And they, Lincoln even being a martyr for this, you might say. But he talked about God in the Gettysburg Address, talks about it. His second inaugural is laced with Christian symbolism and Christian language. And so I think it's I just think you have to recognize it kind of all the way through. You've got this religion without Jesus at the centerpiece of American life. Then you get from that, you get into the period of Roosevelt and Johnson and Truman, and you get "In God We Trust" as the slogan
again,
in opposition to the Soviet Union and the communists. We are not them. We trust in God. Very interesting. Bella talks about how Roosevelt was pretty nervous about getting the coinage. I think it's Bella.
You're talking about FDR?
Yes.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt?
Yes, FDR. was really nervous about getting it. Oh, no, it's Meacham that talks about this, but that it's, he's very nervous about trivializing In God We Trust by putting it on coins. This is what he said, but it seems to me eminently unwise to cheapen such a motto by use on coins, just as it would be to cheapen it by use on postage stamps or in advertisements. And it wasn't him, was it, that actually ended up, didn't Truman do that?
Oh, we talked about Eisenhower being the
Eisenhower, I mean, yes.
Push through In God We Trust and those things.
But nonetheless, that is a function of the civic religion, where now the coinage even has the language of this civic religion impressed on it. And you've got it, well, as recently as the, where President Biden, maybe it was after his acceptance speech, the first thing he did was pause for prayer, which was admirable and I trust humble, but there was no, you know, no mandate to preach or to pray to the biblical God or to the God who is active in the scripture necessarily. So it's just an important part of American life that we have to acknowledge. And then we have to say, what difference does it make if it's Christian or not? And I suppose that's maybe the next thing we should talk about in the next episode, is what difference does it make if it's not a Christian religion, or if it is a Christian religion, how does that make a difference to Christians today?
Yeah, we'll save that for the next episode. I think for this, and I hope this long excursus through explaining these things is helpful to explain the symbols you see every day. Realize when you look out and go, there's a lot of religious symbols out there, I wonder if they're Christian. Realize, yeah, there are a lot of religious symbols and they're not necessarily Christian. They are allusions probably to Christianity, because that Christianity is the most influential from Western civilization into the United States of America. But we have something else going on in addition to Christianity within America. At a national level, there's a religion, a civil religion, and there are plenty of Christians in America, and it can be confusing as one of them to look out and go, that kind of looks like Christianity, what do I do with it? And we're trying to help you see that there's things to be pieced apart and looked at independent of each other, because they can confuse us if we think they're the same thing. So that's what we're doing. That's the point of this episode. We hope it's helpful. If you got questions about it, send us an email, podcast@newlifenw.com. We'd love to answer some questions. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and rate us. We're starting to see some ratings. We got some 5 stars. We got some less than 5 stars. Keep sending us the 5 stars. That'd be great. If you find what we're doing helpful, writing a review would be really great in getting this to other people. And you can share it with a friend. Send it to them on a text thread or a Facebook message or a Snapchat, Insta, whatever. Just do all the things and send it to people. We think these conversations can be helpful in helping people think well about where they live. So we look forward to the next conversation.